Mingo Tart reads, Survival to Flourishing, written by Hadrian Peverell Black. Summary: Harry Potter is raised by his godfathers, Sirius and Remus. This is how everything changes. Chapter 1: New Beginnings. The goblins also offered their most renowned clients the possibility of living a will. And that was why Sirius, Remus, Emmeline, Mary, Albus and Minerva were present that day. Alice and Frank should have been there too, Sirius thought, his heart pounding. In the study of Thursnout, the account manager of the Potter accounts, Sirius took a moment to look around and take note of the objects. The walls were lined with ancient scrolls and intricate contracts, with red wax seals and arcade symbols. Soft lights emanating from magic lanterns created a warm and welcoming illumination, while a faint smell of incense and ink permeated the air. The desk was cluttered with documents, inkwells and quills, as well as magical crystals and arcade tools. Detailed maps of fantastical lands and complex diagrams adorned the walls. Thursnout spoke up, getting everybody's attention with a single light cuff. Remus, as soon as the goblin picked up an envelope, squeezed Sirius' hand tightly.
As you well know, Thursnout said, we are gathered here to read the last wishes of James Fleamon Potter and Lily Rose Evans, née Potter.
He opened the envelope and began to read.
We, James Fleamon Potter, son of Fleamon Carlos Potter and Euphemia Meredith Foley, née Potter, and Lily Rose Evans, née Potter, daughter of Rose Iris and Marcus Reginald Evans, in full possession of our mental and magical faculties, do make this will to express our last wishes. We appoint our account manager, Thursnout, as our executor.
The goblin cleared his throat before turning the scroll over and continuing to read.
We want our funeral to be celebrated with the appropriate rites to preserve our body. Also, may our memory be preserved for the appropriate paintings if our heir, Harry James Potter, should see fit.
Sirius smiled. Harry could talk to his parents. He was grateful they included it. He was afraid that otherwise it would not be allowed.
I, Lily Evans, appoint Alice Prewitt, née Longbottom, as godmother and guardian of my son, Harry James Potter. I also leave vault number 1987 to Mary MacDonald. I also leave vault number 1988 to Emmeline Vance.
Mary and Emmeline wiped the tears from their cheeks.
I, James Potter, do appoint Sirius Black as the godfather and guardian of my son, Harry James Potter. I leave vault number 2001 to Remus Lupin.
Remus smiled, holding Sirius' hand.
All remaining assets of our wizarding estate, including spellbooks, magical artifacts, and potion ingredients, go to our son, Harry James Potter, until he can inherit. Sirius Black and Alice Prewitt will take care of the residences, monetary assets, and our assets.
Sirius took a deep breath. Harry couldn't have inherited everything his parents had left him. But Sirius would make sure nothing was ruined in the process.
We declare that this magical will was made of my own free will, without compulsion or external influence, and that it was authenticated by the goblin Thursnout of Gringotts. We further declare that our secret keeper was never Sirius Orion Black, but Peter Pettigrew, who is named the enemy of the House of Potter, and all our allies from this time forward.
Thursnout finished reading.
A copy of the will was sent to the Aurors promptly to avoid the imprisonment of Lord Sirius Black.
Sirius smiled, still feeling the guilt eating away at him. He had convinced Lily and James to choose the Rat as their secret keeper. It should have been him. They would still be here.
Very good,
Thursnout said, passing three boxes to Remus, Emmeline and Mary.
Since Mrs. Longbottom is incapable of caring for a child, Lily Evans, Nee Potter, has established that Remus Lupin can take her place.
Mary and Emmeline nodded. Neither had intended to stay in England, their jobs taking them too far away to care for a child living in London.
Lily Evans left a letter for Professor Minerva McGonagall,
Thursnout then said, passing the sealed letter to the woman.
And she asks her forgiveness in advance for any trouble her son might cause at school.
The teacher stifled a laugh, tears in her eyes.
On the other hand, James Potter left a request for Professor Dumbledore to return the goods that had been loaned to him and give them to Sirius Black for safekeeping.
Thursnout said, glancing at the man. Dumbledore nodded.
I didn't intend to keep them. Very good,
Thursnout agreed.
They also left a letter to you, Professor Dumbledore.
The headmaster was also given a letter.
Sirius Black, Remus Lupin,
Thursnout said.
Lily Evans and James Potter have placed your magical signatures on all of the Potter family dwellings. When you are ready, you can stay there.
Thank you, Thursnout, Remus spoke, squeezing Sirius' hand in support. We'll go as soon as we get Harry.
Very good, Thursnout nodded. This meeting is then over.
May your vaults never empty and your swords remain sharp, Master Thursnout, Sirius spoke.
May your enemies fall painfully and your victories be swift, Lord Black.
Thursnout returned the respectful bow of his head before watching the group of wizards leave his office. Sirius and Remus headed towards the bank exit. Come on, Remus whispered, running his hand over Sirius' back. We have to go get Harry.
My dear boys, can I interrupt you for a moment?
Albus had approached them, his blue eyes sparkling. Of course, Professor, Remus allowed. Does it concern James Sassetts?
Oh, that too,
Dumbledore nodded. And
his cloak.
Sirius narrowed his eyes. You have no right to keep it.
Obviously not.
Dumbledore smiled, bowing his head and handing the package to Sirius.
I had every intention of returning it to you, Sirius.
Well, Sirius growled, now I have to get my godson.
Speaking of Harry, Dumbledore said, I wanted to try and convince you not to take custody of him.
Excuse me, what? Sirius exclaimed. You heard the will, right? Lily and James' last wishes?
I did,
Dumbledore nodded gravely.
And I wouldn't ask you not to respect their wishes if it wasn't of primary importance.
We need a good reason, Albus, Remus said. And it has to be really good.
I have reason to believe that Voldemort did not die the other night,
Dumbledore announced.
I'm not sure how he survived, but he did. So you understand that Harry will be in extreme danger.
Yes, Sirius nodded. And an old house with the right protections is the best way to keep him safe.
Ah, But I think Lily has already provided the protection we need,
Albus said, his eyes sparkling even more.
The sacrifice of pure love she made provided enough protection to balance off the killing curse.
Remus paused for a moment before shaking his head and saying, No.
Remus,
you won't send Harry to that woman, Remus exclaimed. Dumbledore nodded.
I know it's hard, but it's the best way to keep Harry safe from Voldemort and his followers who are still at large.
Sirius gritted his teeth before saying, If he's not happy there.
Certainly,
Dumbledore agreed.
But I'm sure Harry's safety takes precedence over everything else.
Sirius and Remus exchanged a look before Sirius said, Well, for his protection.
Thank you, my dear boys, Albus said. I'll tell Hagrid he can take him there then.
Sirius glanced at Remus after the headmaster had left. We'll keep an eye on him, Mooney, Sirius promised. We're not leaving him alone. Remus nodded. I know, Sirius. He gave the other a kiss, hiding his face in Sirius' long hair. I know. Chapter 2. Guilt and Solutions. 3 years had passed since that day. Harry didn't remember his parents. He remembered only a flying motorcycle, a flash of green light. Sometimes he also heard a dog barking in his dreams. His family wasn't nice. His aunt didn't want to deal with him, and his uncle often sent him to his room under the stairs to avoid disturbing their normal guests. Harry didn't really care. Every time his aunt and uncle told him to leave, Harry did so. Because every time they sent him away, Harry took refuge in Remus's library. The first time he had met Remus, he and his dog had been lost, and Harry had been happy to show them the way to the house they had just purchased. He couldn't believe how big Mr. Remus's dog was. Harry had even been allowed to pet him. The only thing that made him sad was the expression Mr. Remus sometimes wore when he looked at Harry. He always looked so sad. Harry sighed, glancing towards the house at the end of the street. After gardening, he would go to Mr. Remus and keep him some company. Maybe, Harry thought hopefully, he would even get a few more pieces of chocolate. Remus had been having trouble controlling his wolf. Remus, Sirius called, looking up from the documents he had prepared. They had all been provided by Gringotts to make the change of guardianship quicker and easier. They are starving him, Remus growled, eyes flashing amber. Did you hear what that thing called him? Half-breed. Remus bared his teeth at his partner. They called our puppy half-breed. Sirius sighed, running a hand through his long hair. Spending time as Padfoot was difficult because then he lacked the will to go back as a human being. But seeing Harry's expression light up when he played with the puppy dog, it had made the prospect of being a dog much more appealing, especially after he saw how those muggles treated him. Harry will be here any minute, Sirius said, glancing at Remus. Are you ready to explain everything to him? Remus sighed. Sirius imagined that just as he himself felt, Remus was overwhelmed by the whole situation. They should never have agreed to Dumbledore's request. Harry had reacted as any 4-year-old would react to the news that his parents' friends would raise him. Or rather, he reacted like any abused child would have reacted. He had been so happy at the thought of a family, of someone who wanted him, that he hadn't even questioned anything. "I will talk to Andromeda," Sirius murmured. "She works at San Mango's. She can probably help us with all this." Remus nodded. The floor lit up green as Albus Dumbledore appeared in the living room of the Black Estate. Sirius had thought about taking Harry to the Potter Manor, but in reality, none of them were ready to enter Lily and James's house. Not yet. "Albus," Remus spoke, his voice cold. "We weren't expecting you."
"I heard that Harry was taken away from his family."
The old headmaster's tone of voice was disappointed. Sirius knew that if he had been in Padfoot form, his hackles would have stood on end. "His family, as you badly defined him, was abusing him," Remus growled, eyes turning amber. "I think we can all agree it wasn't the best environment to raise a child."
"I thought we had this discussion," Albus sighed, his blue eyes focusing on Remus. "Harry's safety had to come before his happiness."
"Did you know that?" Sirius interrupted, the growl in his voice. "Did you know what those people would do to him?"
"Sirius, my dear boy,"
Albus tried to speak, but Sirius cut him off. "How dare you do that to a child?" Sirius screamed. "How can you call Death Eaters evil and then accept abuse like that? Mental and physical, who knows how long it will take Harry to recover?"
"He seems fine,"
Dumbledore said, eyes focusing on Remus.
"Of course, because he's a child and he just discovered that magic is real," Sirius screamed. "A child who was ready and extremely happy to go with two strangers to leave his aunt and uncle, relatives who not only hate magic, but who discriminated against him because of the color of his skin."
Albus sighed, suddenly looking tired.
"But Voldemort..."
"Don't use that excuse," Sirius shouted, moving forward and lowering his voice. "I think sometimes you forget who you're talking to, Albus. Don't forget I'm Lord Black now, and don't forget that you just admitted that you accepted abuse, not just of a magical child, but of Harry Potter."
Imagine what could happen if people like Rita Skeeter got permission to publish this kind of information, Remus murmured. "I don't know if you could keep just one of the roles you currently have."
"You do not understand,"
Albus persisted, proving to Sirius that senility had finally struck.
"The words of the house of Harry's aunts, who shares Lily's blood, protect him from Voldemort and his people."
"Blood words are based on love, Albus," Sirius screamed. "And I know, like my mom would let me skip those lessons, as if it is based on love and affection through blood. Petunia hated everything Lily was, and that hatred has passed on to her son. Those protections are completely useless. And if you don't believe me, send Snivellus there. He has the dark mark. He should be kept out of the house. See if it happens," Sirius growled. "Now, get out of my house."
"Your interventions towards Harry is no longer accepted," Remus growled. "And I don't think we'll change our minds. Not this time." With one last uncertain look over his shoulder, Albus left the Black Estate. Andromeda Black was looking at her cousin with a serious look.
"Harry is not well at all, Sirius," Andromeda said. "I don't know how to tell you, but he won't recover easily or quickly.
Indeed, the road will be long and extremely difficult. I thought that might be the case, Sirius murmured in response. Remus had taken Harry down to the kitchen, letting him taste Remus's famous chocolate, leaving Sirius with his cousin to face the thorniest issue. Obviously, he's too thin. His bones are too fragile, and many of them didn't grow back properly the first time they were broken, Andromeda began listing, looking at her notes. His organs suffer from vitamin and nutrient deficiency. He's severely anemic. His muscles are undeveloped and his cartilage and joints pain almost as much as those of an elderly muggle. Andromeda looked up to see Sirius' expression breaking. What can we do? Sirius asked, trying to keep his wits about him. It was his and Remus's fault. They had agreed to listen to Dumbledore, and Harry had paid the price. Our regime of nutritional potions will help with these deficiencies, and obviously a correct nutritional regime must be planned to allow him to recover his digestive abilities, Andromeda began to explain. Bones, joints, and cartilage are a more difficult subject. What do you mean? Sirius asked. Skellige allows the regrowth of small portions of bone, Andromeda said, looking at Sirius's attentive expression. The damage to the general connective tissue makes me realize that the entire system should be completely regrown, rather than trying to fix the existing one. Isn't there a different way? Sirius asked. I saw Prong's expression after he had an accident. Skellige is extremely painful. Yes, but that's not even the worst part, Andromeda said. There are potions and spells that are applied in these cases to reduce the pain. The main problem is that, for the duration of the treatment, Harry will not be able to move. In no way? Sirius asked. Not even when the arms will be faced? He would be imbalanced, and I don't think it's optimal to make him move too much, Andromeda said. We could put him in a magical coma for a while and deal with everything together, but I don't think that's the best solution. What do you suggest then? Sirius asked, sighing and feeling the guilt arise. I think providing him with alternatives would be the best thing, Andromeda said. I would suggest a mind healer for his emotional trauma, but perhaps now is not the best time. Instead, we can provide him with companionship and a support group of friends and family. And would that be enough? Sirius asked. None of us specialized in dealing with children with trauma like that. I know, Andromeda said. But Harry was convinced by his muggle relatives that he was worthless. To want to talk about what they did to him, he must be convinced that they lied. And this can only be done by a support group of friends and family who convince him that he is worth something, that he is worthy of receiving support and help. Sirius nodded. He had never really thought about the matter. Andromeda was right. Subjecting Harry to talking to a mind healer at that moment would only lead to the boy withdrawing and refusing any kind of help. Making him decide instead that he needed support, well, that was already different. Okay, Sirius nodded. Other things? No, that's all for now, Andromeda said. I have already made a diet that Harry should follow for the first few weeks. And I will also send you the potions to take before and after each meal. We have to explain the whole procedure to Harry, I guess, Sirius said. Andromeda nodded. I already told him that he had been injured quite extensively and that healing would be long, painful, and difficult. He responded by saying that if it was okay with you and Remus, then it was okay with him too. It shouldn't be like this. Sirius rubbed his face. Meta, how can I think my parents were any better than those muggles? They never left us hurt, especially at such a young age. Sirius knew he had been punished severely by his parents, but soon after being punished, one of them would arrive with healing potions and their personal healer would perform his monthly visits on him and his brother, providing the proper care soon after. Those muggles had beaten him down without worrying about the consequences. "Can we do something about the muggles and Dumbledore?" Sirius asked, looking at Andromeda. "Against the muggles? Certainly," Andromeda nodded. "I will send the results of my exams and some memories that Harry may provide, along with yours and Remus's about their interactions, and will be tried by our agents in the Muggle ward." Sirius smiled. They would at least get what they deserved. "For Dumbledore, the matter is much more delicate, I'm afraid," Andromeda said, breaking Sirius's smile. "We can't blame him for the actions of Muggles." "So?" Sirius asked. "Should he get away with what he excused?"
"No,"
Andromeda said. "But there's one thing Slytherins do very well, cousin." "And that would be..." Sirius tilted his head, casting a dubious look to Andromeda. "Wait, and strike at the worst moment." Andromeda's smile was deadly. "Don't worry, he'll make another mistake. And at that point, we could blame him for all his misdeeds." Sirius smiled. "All right, I will trust the snake in the room." Chapter 3. The New Family. Convincing Harry to endure the ordeal that was regaining his body's mobility had been too easy for Sirius's liking. The only good thing about all that experience was that his godson had finally met other children who were closer to his age and far better than the muggles who surrounded him at Privet Drive. Sirius kept tabs on their games, watching as the older ones took Harry's condition into consideration and acted accordingly. "You've got a great group of kids there, Molly," Sirius said, glancing at the Weasley mother, who he remembered as a final year student when he himself was only a first year.
"Thank you, Sirius."
Molly had a smile so full of love as she looked at her children that it hurt Sirius. He knew it would be the same expression Lily would wear when looking at Harry.
"Harry's pretty special too,"
Molly said, looking softly at Harry. "I don't know what I should do to get my kids to listen to me." Sirius snorted. "I'm waiting for him to know my limits and start demanding to be spoiled." Molly giggled.
"Everyone does it,"
she reassured him.
"You know, he's really your son when he tries to be spoiled by you," she told him, making Sirius smile in response.
"Well, in that case, I can't wait for him to start demanding to be spoiled," Sirius retorted. Then, hearing Harry's laughter ring through the room, Andromeda had been right. It did him good to have some company. Staying stuck in one place really sucked. Harry had hated it the first few days. His arms didn't hurt, but they didn't do anything else either. He couldn't raise his hands or eat by himself. The good thing was that Sirius and Remus had started helping him do everything, so Harry was often hugged and kissed on the head as a reward for being so good. Another good thing was that Harry now had friends, true friends who appreciated him. There were a couple of sisters, Parvati and Padma, who drew really well and had been so happy to draw Harry pictures of India, where they had been born and raised for much of their lives. They were twins, but Harry had found it amusing to find their differences. Padma was more curious, thoughtful, and loved finding the cause behind everything. Parvati was much more expansive, impetuous, and vibrated with the energy. Harry had enjoyed their quiet afternoons because of his medical condition even more, knowing how much it cost his new friend to stay put for a long period of time. Andromeda, or Aunt Meda, had a daughter 7 years older than Harry, Nymphadora. She had insisted on being called Tongs, even though she had agreed to be called Dora, but only by Harry, and she was the prettiest cousin Harry had ever had. She had already smuggled some good chocolate into Harry's room, winking and letting her hair turn blue for a moment, because Dora could change the color of the hair and eyes, and not only, she could change all over. Harry had found it extremely funny when she had imitated the Sirius for all of them, and when Sirius appeared behind her, he didn't punish her. On the contrary, he was absolutely amused by her little performance. Another friend Harry had made was Neville. Sirius had said that Harry's mom would have been Neville's godmother, and that Neville's mom was Harry's godmother. This made them kind of adopted brothers. And Neville was so kind and smart, and he had no problem sitting next to Harry for hours, talking or reading. In fact, he even brought books about plants, and he talked for hours about his favorites and why he liked them so much. Harry loved this quiet but totally kind brother. He also had another group of friends, the Weasleys. Mum Weasley was absolutely kind, sweet, and she thought all of them were severely undernourished, so she brought lots of food to each visit. And it was all so good. Harry particularly loved Mum Weasley's treacle tart. Dad Weasley was an employee of the Ministry of Magic and worked closely with muggles. Harry had been happy to explain to him how the things he knew worked, even if there weren't many, but Sirius and Remus knew more, especially Remus, and had been happy to answer in moments when Harry had no idea what to say. Mum and Dad Weasley had a lot of kids. There was Bill, the eldest, who was 10 years older than Harry. He had excellent grades and had already decided what he wanted to do after school. Work as a curse breaker. Harry hadn't quite understood what he was supposed to do, but it sounded absolutely fantastic. Then there was Charlie, who was in the same year as Dora, but was in Gryffindor instead of Hufflepuff. He wanted to go and train dragons. He had said that his mother wouldn't let him have one as a pet, so he would study to have much more than just one. After Charlie, there was Percy. He hadn't attended Hogwarts yet, but he knew he wanted to work at the ministry. He was kind, if sometimes too stuffy, with his constant complaints that Harry shouldn't move too much or eat too many sweets. After Percy, there were Fred and George. They were twins, like Parvati and Padma, and Harry had looked in them for those small differences that he had already found in his other twin friends. Fred was much more outgoing than George, and George usually spoke second. Fred also had a small mole under his eyes that George didn't have. They had both already decided that they would open a magical joke shop, and Harry couldn't wait. The same age as Harry was Ron. At first, Ron had been shy and very reluctant to talk and play with Harry. After some convincing from Bill and Charlie, however, and after seeing Nev, Padma and Parvati talking to Harry, he had followed their example and taken it upon himself to keep Harry informed of all the Quidditch matches that were being played and the best players of the season. Harry couldn't believe that wizards use brooms to fly. A year younger than Harry, there was Ginny, the youngest of the Weasleys. Harry wasn't very comfortable with Ginny since she would blush and keep looking at him every second. Fortunately, Mother Weasley rarely allowed Ginny to be alone with them, citing she was still too young. Harry loved his new friends. It was like having a family. Chapter 4. unresolved issues. Sirius was sitting next to Harry. They were almost done with his arms and would soon be moving on his legs and back. Harry didn't seem to be worried, quite the opposite. "Now I can see all of Padma's drawings without anyone holding it up for me," he said, smiling at his godfather. "And Neville said he could leave his books here so I could read them when I got bored." Sirius smiled. "They're great friends." "They really are," Harry exclaimed, as excited as a five-year-old could be. "And Fred and George said they could show me a miniature Quidditch game. Ron can't wait to play a game here." Sirius raised an eyebrow. "I don't think you can play Quidditch in a room, Prongslet." "Of course we can," Harry argued, frowning as if Sirius's doubt was a personal insult. "Fred and George said they could do it, and Bill and Charlie confirmed they'd be here to make sure everything was okay." Sirius snorted, reaching out to ruffle Harry's hair, smiling at the fake pout creeping onto Harry's face. "And I will finally be able to stop you when you ruin my hair," Harry muttered grumpily. "At least I'm not with my aunt and uncle. Dudley would have had a great time with me if I hadn't even been able to escape during the hunt." "The hunt?" Sirius asked, blinking and feeling uneasy. "What do you mean, the hunt?" "You know, Harry hunting," Harry explained. "I run from Dudley's gang and they chase me, and if they catch me, well..." Sirius growled, startling Harry. Seeing the frightened look on Harry's face, Sirius was quick to speak. "I'm not mad at you, Prongslet, I promise. I'm mad at your cousin for what he did to you." "But my uncle and aunt said it was okay," Harry muttered in confusion. "Well, your uncle and aunt lied," Sirius said, trying to be calm and praying that Remus would soon return from his outburst. "It's not okay at all, and I promise you no one will ever hurt you again." "But freaks shouldn't be treated well," Harry frowned, as if trying to square things with what he'd always known. "Who told you that?" Sirius turned, relieved when he saw Remus enter the room and sit on the other side of Harry, stroking his hair as he did so. Harry was still clearly confused. "My Uncle Vernon," he said confidently, as if the words were an indisputable truth. And for someone who had grown up hearing them over and over again, they probably were. "Harry, listen very carefully," Remus said, speaking slowly and calmly. Only his clenched fists and the grimace he was trying to hide revealed how angry he really was. "You're not a freak, or a monster, or a half-breed. You're a lovely child, and an extremely intelligent and curious boy. I'm sure you'll grow up to be an even brighter and more intelligent young man. You're kind, sweet, observant, and intuitive. That's why Harry, Neville, Padma, Parvati, Ron, Fred, George, Percy, Charlie, and Bill love spending time with you." Remus smiled in amusement. "And that's why we have to drag Nymphadora out at night, promising her she can see you again the next day." Harry blushed adorably, his green eyes shining. "She doesn't like being called Nymphadora. I call her Dora." "And only you can, because you're special. And your cousin knows that too," Sirius laughed, reaching up to ruffle Harry's hair once more, making him pout again. "Sirius, behave yourself," Remus scolded, making Harry smile happily, who shot Sirius a victorious look. Now, it was Sirius's turn to pretend to pout, making Harry laugh at his godfather's reaction. "I heard from the twins," Remus said, trying to divert Harry's attention from his past, a past that could never reach him, that they have a surprise in mind for you.
Yes, Harry exclaimed happily, indoor Quidditch match.
Remus raised an eyebrow, muttering, I hope the bladders aren't included in the bowl they'll be carrying. Sirius frowned. He had completely ignored the danger of the bladders could pose.
To the room, but more importantly, to Harry. Meda had been worried about any new fractures. Bladders caused new fractures very quickly.
I don't know, but that would be great, Harry exclaimed excitedly. Sirius and Remus exchanged a look. They clearly needed to have more talks with Harry, especially about the line between fun and danger, and they needed to check those bowls. Harry was excited. Aunt Meda had come by and looked at him, smiling and proud.
I see you followed all my instructions, Harry. Well done.
Harry beamed at her, a smile that only grew wider when his aunt asked if he was ready to move his arms again. Harry couldn't wait. Who cared if his legs were now tied up? Harry knew that after that, he could get up and walk on his own, and Aunt Meda had promised that the pain would go away. Harry heard the noise under the stairs. Then the Weasleys came into his room. Bill and Charlie were at his sides immediately, hugging him and smiling when Harry hugged them back. Percy looked carefully at the different potions Harry had to take, looking less worried than he had last time. Ron, Fred and George, however, placed a huge trunk in the center of the room.
What you got there? Remus asked.
Harry, released by the two redheads, saw his godparents standing in the doorway, both clearly worried as they looked at the trunk.
Bladders, Quaffle and Snitch,
Fred replied cheerfully. George continued, we have no idea what Harry's talent is, so for now, we'll just throw the Quaffle at him.
Ron nodded dead serious. It's the least dangerous thing I've ever done.
Which requires further discussions, Ronald. Percy told him, narrowing his eyes at his younger brother.
Nonsense, Fred snorted. We can't wait until Harry can walk. So we can include him in the list of dangerous and questionable things worth doing, George finished.
Remus coughed.
With his godparents' permission, of course. The twins chirped, making Harry and Ron laugh and the older brothers and two adults in the room snort.
What about bladders? Sirius asked, looking worried.
Not to spoil the fun, boys, but I know how destructive bladders can be, and it really isn't the best time for Harry to be having a broken bone.
We know, Fred began, his blue gaze unusually serious as he fixed them on Sirius. We would never put Harry in danger.
And it was also taken into account, of course, George continued as he released the Snitch, in preparing for this game that without bludgers, we can't really have Quidditch. So we had to compromise on having bludgers and not hurting Harrykins, Fred said, closing the window to prevent the Snitch from escaping.
And we got these, they both exclaimed, releasing the bludgers. Harry couldn't see how they were different from the images of the other bludgers, but then one hit Sirius. His black hair turned canary yellow, and Sirius smiled. It didn't hurt.
Nope, but your hair might disagree, Remus said, laughing.
Confused, Sirius grabbed a nearby mirror before laughing in amusement.
So, they just play pranks on those who get hit? That's brilliant, boys.
Fred and George looked extremely proud of Sirius' statement.
Bill spoke up. I wouldn't have allowed this otherwise, Sirius. The game is perfectly safe if you want to stay on as a supervisor.
No, no, Sirius held up his hand. For goodness sake, I hate parents supervising. Have fun and don't break anything, okay?
Remus sighed. What Sirius meant was that we've seen that there's no real danger, and you can be left to yourselves to enjoy yourselves. If any of you get hurt, though, don't hesitate to call us straight away. After everyone had nodded, Harry's godparents gave them space to have fun. Harry might never have become bitter, but he had managed to catch the snitch even while sitting down. Sirius and Remus hadn't stopped smiling ever since they'd heard the news. Chapter 5. It's not the outside that counts, it's what's inside. Harry was vibrating with barely contained excitement. Sirius could see it, Remus could see it, and his Aunt Meta had seen it when she had declared him fully healed and ready to move around on his own. For the first time since he had moved into their house, Harry would finally be able to go out and move around the park he had watched all hours of the day from his window, with the advantage that this time he would not be disturbed by his cousin and his friends while he enjoyed himself. And above all, he would have friends with him, friends who appreciated him and who were eager to go out with him. We will follow you at a distance, Remus said, but until then, Bill, Charlie and Nymphadora are in charge. Ignoring the, don't call me Nymphadora, Remus continued. Don't argue needlessly, remember that we are in a Muggle suburb, so no magic or pranks, and stay close. Yes, Remus, the children chanted, some seriously, like Percy, some jokingly, like men in an army, like Fred and George, some nervously, like Ron, and finally, some impatiently, like Harry. Good, Sirius clapped his hands. Have fun and don't do anything I wouldn't do. That leaves plenty of leeway, because there's nothing you wouldn't do, Uncle Sir. Dora smiled in amusement, letting her pink hair go black for a moment, mimicking Sirius's style. Well said, Sirius winked, only to be grabbed by the ear by Remus and dragged away from the children. Your godparents are so cool, Fred gasped. George nodded. Mom would never let us do that. Harry smiled. Sirius and Remus really were great, and Harry loved them. Come on, let's all go and have some fun, Dora said, suddenly looking very mischievous. And you're all under my command, which is great. They're not under our command, Bill sighed. We're supposed to take care of them, not torture them. Oh, look, the fun police, Dora snorted, letting her hair turn red for a moment. Charlie sighed. Go on, he waved the children away. Don't accidentally turn anyone into an animal, please. Fred snorted. Sorry, brother, we're not incompetent. We know how to do it on purpose, George sniffled the air, wrinkling his nose as if Charlie had just offended them. The two of them took Harry, Ron, Neville, Padma and Parvati and led them away from the three charged with protecting them. Percy, however, remained close to Charlie, discussing something Harry hadn't had time to hear. Come on, let's see if we can play some pranks on unsuspecting muggles, Fred smiled excitedly. George nodded. And I can't wait to hear how many people ask us if we're twins. Harry frowned. Isn't it obvious? Ah, sweet, innocent little Harrykins, Fred sighed, looking sweetly at Harry as if he were an adorable little puppy. Even though it's obvious, people still ask that, George said, putting his hand on his forehead in an extremely dramatic manner. For compensation. That's a terrible way to start a conversation, Padma announced, to no small agreement from the other children. I think that's why our parents don't take us to play with muggles. That? And having to be careful what we say, Parvati cocked her head, which seems like too much work for nothing.
That's not entirely true, Neville said.
We're young enough that if anyone heard us, they'd think we were playing a really elaborate game. Besides, Gran told me it teaches us to be respectful of what we have and to understand muggles better, how they live and behave, which reduces the risk of exposing ourselves. Everyone looked at Neville, who blushed. Harry knew the boy hated attention, but he also knew he was extremely intelligent, and it was conversations like this that allowed everyone to see that.
Well said, Neville. George clapped him on the shoulder. It's so kind of you to share your wisdom with us. Oh, great one, Fred added, bowing exaggeratedly, making a sweeping gesture with his arms as he bowed his torso. Neville blushed even more, and Ron pushed his older brothers away. Stop it! You're making him uncomfortable. The twins laughed before starting to walk away, taking Harry between them and leading him to different corners of the park to find a game that the raven-haired boy would enjoy. Harry found it much funnier to hear the two boys' answers to all the adults who asked them if they were twins.
Nope. We were adopted, and they were all surprised to see how similar we were, they had replied to one lady. Oh no, we're cousins, they had said to another shortly after.
And you're not the first to tell us that, you know, they had asked the one who had stopped them shortly after. Why are we so similar? They had answered the man who had stopped them shortly after.
No. I am his evil twin, who is waiting for the best moment to take control of his life, they had stated when a couple had stopped them and asked.
Oh no, I am blonde, he's black-haired. We are clearly different, ma'am, they had said to the last one.
It wasn't so much fun to hear their answers as it was to watch the confused expressions they left in those people as they walked away. Then Harry had let two of them sitting between them, and using sand from the park, they had started to build what was a very elaborate sandcastle. So elaborate that Harry assumed magic was involved in some way.
Their fun was interrupted when a couple of children ran onto the sandcastle, pushing Harry as they did so.
Ouch!
Harry exclaimed as he fell, clutching his arm to his chest.
I didn't think your kind felt pain, one of the children chuckled. Yes, why did you even think it mattered what you thought, you little mongrel? The other boy added.
Harry felt tears well up in his eyes, but Fred and George acted before it became too obvious.
Your kind? Fred tapped his chin. Oh, you mean the kind with a brain?
I know it may sound unbelievable to you, but there are people who can think. Georgia nodded seriously. It's not just a story told to scare you.
And you're lucky, because none of them will ever treat you like you're stupid and unable to think.
Fred smiled gently, as if he had pity on them.
Yes, they can think. They can feel complex emotions. They can communicate without offending.
George listed, holding up his fingers each time he added a new point. And most importantly, they think before they speak and feel complex emotions as they speak.
Fred nodded. It happens. It's not a nightmare or anything. You're very lucky to have met one at such a young age.
The children blushed before running away. Fred and George then hugged Harry before very quickly pulling him up.
Let's find the others, George said.
Yes, Fred nodded. If we stay home, we can play Quidditch.
Sirius was walking out of Harry's door, waiting for Remus to find the best way to broach the subject with Harry.
I can't believe these prejudices exist, Sirius sighed. I thought it was horrible hearing my mother say things about muggles, but even they don't mess around with hate speech.
They don't.
Remus spoke slowly, and Harry had been exposed to comments like that before, from his aunt and uncle. We're lucky that Fred and George were with Harry at the time, and that they helped him. Otherwise, I don't even want to imagine the kind of damage they could have done to Harry.
I know,
Sirius ran a hand through his hair. Should we go talk to him?
Yes, Remus nodded. There's no right way to talk about this, Sirius. No matter how much we prepare, we'll never be ready to talk to him about this.
Now understand why Lily was so insistent on keeping Harry away from muggles, Sirius murmured. I always thought she was exaggerating, but she wasn't entirely wrong. No, Remus nodded. Come on, let's go.
Sirius hugged Remus, letting him comfort him for a moment before releasing him and heading for Harry's room. They both froze as they opened the door. When they heard the flue go off, they thought everyone had gone home. Instead, Neville, Padma, and Parvati were still inside. Leaning slightly, the two adults stood in the doorway watching the scene. Neville was hugging Harry while Padma was speaking softly.
Parvati and I were a bit mistreated too, Padma said. We never really thought much of it because it was just a few hasty words, but we know how you feel.
My aunt and uncle used to tell me I was a half-breed, Harry muttered, sniffling. And the kids said it again today.
You're not half-breed,
Parvati exclaimed, earning a warning look from her sister for her harsh tone.
Harry, there's nothing wrong with you.
Just because our skin colors aren't the same doesn't mean we're different. Would you call Weasleys half-breeds?
No, Harry said, looking offended at Parvati, before saying, and besides, Weasleys aren't dirt-covered.
Dirty?
Padma blinked.
Your uncle told you that?
Harry, that's completely untrue. You're not dirty, you just have more melanin.
Neville shot Padma a shocked look.
More what?
Melanin,
Padma replied. I've read the Muggle magazines. That's basically what determines the amount of sunlight that it absorbed and therefore causes the skin to be darker or lighter in color. You're darker than the Weasleys, Nev, and therefore have more melanin.
Sirius and Remus had to hold back their laughter at the shocked expressions of the other children.
What? Padma blushed. I read and it was interesting.
You must be in Ravenclaw, Neve deducted.
Parvati nodded, citing in disappointment.
I promise not to avoid her, even if she ends up reading all day.
Harry laughed in amusement. Padma rolled her eyes before turning and saying, red hair of the type the Weasleys have is typically Irish hair, not English. Technically, their family could be of different origins too, but no one would ever call them mixed race, would they?
No, Harry nodded. The children haven't even noticed. They seemed surprised that they were defending me.
Because children are stupid, Padma said,
firm and confident. And Harry, it doesn't matter what color your hair, your eyes, or your skin is. It's what's inside that matters.
Seeing their godson huddled between his friends, Sirius and Remus decided to leave him alone with them. The support of his friends was all Harry needed to heal.
Chapter 6. The Truth About the Past. It had been years since Harry had moved in with Sirius and Remus, till Harry couldn't remember a time before that. Ron, Nev, Padma, and Parvati were regular fixtures at the Black Lupin. Potter, as Sirius loved to add at the end of every letter, making Remus sigh wearily and Harry laugh in amusement, household. The twins had started Hogwarts that year and were extremely pleased to have a larger audience and an ever-growing target audience. What was the challenge if they were hitting the little ones? Fred had explained to Harry as they packed their trunks for the school year.
They would hit students and then teachers, George had concluded, saying that they either gave it their all or they might as well give nothing at all.
Who of your friends are coming today? Remus asked, raising an eyebrow at Harry.
Ron should stop by for a bit, Harry said. Nev has lessons with his grandmother and
Padma and Parvati left for India this morning. By the way, Sirius said, would you like to travel a bit? We haven't really moved since we got here.
I love the idea, Harry smiled. Anywhere is fine with me.
Then we'll arrange it, Remus said. Maybe Sirius can ask his old friends about places we can visit.
Anywhere the Blacks have a house is fine, Sirius shrugged. I'll check with the family goblin where the Blacks' houses are and arrange some trips.
Harry smiled excitedly. He couldn't wait. The flute lit up and Ron appeared.
Hello!
Hello, Ron!
Harry stood up to give his friend a hug. Then, turning to his godparents, he announced,
I promised I'd show him my broom. And I'd like to go on a flight, if that's okay with you.
Ron added, nervous and excited.
Sure, go ahead, Sirius grinned. Have fun!
As they walked away, Harry whispered to Ron, I told you if you'd ask, they'd say yes.
I never understood how to manipulate Mom into getting things,
Ron admitted, blushing. Ginny can do it so well, it almost comes naturally to her.
She's the only girl, and she takes full advantage of that, Harry shrugged.
And really, Sirius and Remus would be happy to spoil you if you stayed here. The two laughed before continuing on to Harry's room. Ron glanced at the photo Harry kept on his bedside table just before he left, his parents holding Harry.
Your parents were very pretty,
Ron said, walking over to the photo. Harry smiled.
Thanks, Ron.
They were.
Yes?
Ron nodded. They were extremely young, too, weren't they?
Harry shrugged. They looked young, but wizards lived longer than muggles. Maybe they were just slowly down in age.
Mom said, you know who, was the reason a lot of couples got married in a hurry,
Ron added, making Harry frown and wonder who you know who was.
Your parents must have been among them.
Maybe, Harry nodded. Yeah, I heard Mom tell of our neighbor once. She said she was glad they rushed into having a baby since you stopped you-know-who.
The phrase lingered in Harry's mind until Ron left. Then Remus and Sirius asked him at dinner what he was mulling over. Who's you-know-who and why would Ron's neighbor be glad that Mom and Dad rushed into having a baby? How did I stop you-know-who?
The two adults exchanged glances.
We were hoping to have a little more time before we got into this.
Sirius sighed, running a hand over his eyes.
It's not a nice topic, Harry, Remus told him. But maybe it's good that you know, if only so you're not surprised when people talk to you about it.
Why would they talk to me about it? Harry asked. No one I know has ever mentioned it.
They've respected our wishes regarding your friends, Sirius explained, and muggles.
Well, there's a reason we prefer to stick to their company right now. They weren't involved with the war, so they're not reacting to what ended it.
What war? Harry exclaimed, shocked.
Remember when we talked about Hitler and what he did, the propaganda and his rage against the Jews?
Remus asked softly. Harry nodded.
We had a magical Hitler, you might say, Remus continued to explain. He was a dark wizard, you see, and he absolutely despised everything that had to do with the muggles.
You know your mother had a muggle sister.
In our world, there are purebloods, people who are at least three generations older than them who are fully wizards, like the Weasleys, Neville or Sirius.
Half-bloods, those who have a muggle in the three generations before them, your grandparents, for example, or mine,
Remus said quietly.
And there are muggle-borns, who are called mudbloods, from the most extreme purebloods who have muggle parents.
So, this dark wizard hated half-bloods and muggle-borns? Harry asked.
Yes, Voldemort for that was his name, chose the wrong path. He gathered followers, many of them. Some followed him out of fear, others for power, Sirius growled. Why did Ron call him you-know-who, though? Harry asked, blinking in confusion. People are still terrified, Harry, Remus explained. About 20 years ago, when Voldemort first began to build his following, times were extremely difficult. You didn't know who was trustworthy and who wasn't. You were reluctant to extend a hand of friendship to a stranger. Terrible things happened. It was taking over. Naturally, rebel groups against Voldemort arose, Remus said. People never accept a dictator when one comes along. You've seen it in history, and we fought against Voldemort, but he... Whoever fought him was killed. Horribly, Sirius said firmly, his gaze cool. One of the few places that was still safe was Hogwarts. It is said that Voldemort was afraid of Dumbledore, the headmaster of Hogwarts. He did not dare take over the school. Your parents fought against Voldemort, but he admired their power and their courage. Three times they fought, three times they survived, and Voldemort wanted them on his side, Remus sighed. After that, there was a prophecy, Harry. It warned of the son of a couple who had fought Voldemort and survived. Voldemort thought it was about James and Lily's son, you. On Halloween, he came to your house, Sirius interjected. You remember the photo you saw, asking where the other friend was, right? Yes, Peter, right? He betrayed your parents, selling them to Voldemort, Sirius said slowly. It's not clear what happened in that house, Harry. This part is unclear, but... He killed Mom and Dad? Harry muttered. And he couldn't kill you, Remus added. Have you ever wondered why you got the scar on your forehead? It's not just any cut, Harry. That's the mark you get when you've been touched by a powerful, evil magic. He couldn't hurt you, but the spell must have backfired on him because he's gone. Is he dead? Harry asked. Something very painful was happening in Harry's mind.
As the story drew to a close, he saw the blinding flash of green light more clearly than he had ever remembered. Then, for the first time in his life, something else came to mind. A long, cold, cruel laugh. Some people think he is, but... Sirius shook his head. No, we don't think he is. And he killed... Mom and Dad because of me? Harry muttered, feeling guilty. No, Remus shook his head. But you said, Harry said, confused. I said he heard a prophecy and acted on it, Remus said. It's Voldemort's fault and he's alone. It wasn't your fault, Harry. Don't ever think that. Harry nodded. Then he decided to ask something. The spell he used... Was it green?
Why?
Sirius asked, blinking. I remember it. The light and then a cold laugh. Harry shivered, clutching himself. Oh, Prongslet! Sirius and Remus fell to either side of him, clutching him. The next day, Neville was visiting. Remus and Sirius were in the next room. But Neville had noticed the way that they were lingering and the looks they were giving Harry, not worried that he would do something too dangerous, but that he would collapse. Harry supposed that that was to be expected. The dream that night had been much more vivid than the previous ones, perhaps amplified by what he had discovered. "What's going on?" Neville asked. Harry looked at him before seeing the concern in Neville's eyes and deciding to be honest with his almost brother. They told me about Voldemort and my parents. Neville jumped slightly, and Harry remembered what Sirius had said. They were still afraid of him.
I know how you feel, Neville murmured softly. My grandmother told me about it recently. Not about you know who. I already knew that. But about what happened with my parents.
Out of the corner of his eyes, Harry saw Sirius and Remus flinch, showing that they were listening.
What happened to them? Harry asked.
I think the day after you-know-who disappeared, some of his followers broke into my house. They tortured Mom and Dad for information, but they failed. They didn't talk.
Are they... what?
Harry swallowed horrified.
They're alive, Neville said, but they don't know who I am.
Sometimes, no, I think they recognize me. They're in St. Mungo's,
Harry swallowed.
Nev, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Neville accepted Harry's offered hug before saying, but the point is, I know what you're feeling. It sucks, but at least we know they loved us. And now you've got Sirius and Remus.
Yeah,
Harry nodded. And you've got Fran and me.
Neville smiled.
We can't forget Padma, Parvati, and all the Weasleys.
Harry pretended to shudder.
I don't want to know what Fred and George would do to me if they knew we'd forgotten them.
With a laugh, the two friends continued working on their little portable greenhouse, a gift Harry had given Neville the year before. Chapter 7. Hogwarts Coming. Harry was finally 11. Finally, his letter would arrive. He, Padma, Parvati, Nev, and Ron had already promised to stay friends, no matter what house they ended up at. And Harry was extremely happy with the pact. After they had talked about Voldemort, his godparents had added the stories of his parents, and Harry had discovered that his mother's childhood best friend Severus had ended up in a different house from his mom.
That and the war, Remus had said, had put the two friends in two different positions to continue their friendship.
Harry didn't want to lose his friends. At that moment, he was tending to the lilies they had in the garden, in honor of Harry's mother, and the dahlias they had planted in honor of Harry's father, when the boy heard a hissing voice.
It's too hot in here, it said, and if this child hurts me, I won't hesitate to bite him.
Who's this? Harry asked, looking around.
Ah, Parcel Mouth.
Harry looked down to see a snake approaching Harry.
A Parcel Mouth here, after all these years.
The snake sniffled Harry.
Do snakes talk? Or are you just a magical snake?
Harry asked, tilting his head.
Snakes talk, young Parcel Mouth.
The snake told him.
My name's Harry.
Harry introduced himself.
Nice to meet you, Harry. You can call me Python,
was the reply.
Harry, what are you doing? Sirius asked, walking out.
I'm talking to my friend,
Harry pointed to the snake.
His name is Python, and he's very hot,
he informed his godfather. A complicated expression crossed Sirius's face.
You talked to the snake.
You don't understand it?
Harry asked, tilting his head. Python had said Sirius smelled like a dog, and Python quite liked the smell.
Is he talking? Sirius blinked. I'm sorry, Prongslet, but I don't understand him.
Oh, Harry swallowed. But if he's hot, a bowl of cold water is what he needs.
Sirius smiled, walking back into the house.
I like the dog-smelling man, Python informed Harry. Thank him for me.
Harry nodded. Back home, he had taken out the books about the founders of Hogwarts looking to see if any of them could talk to snakes. Salazar Slytherin. Of course, his house symbol was a snake. Pop! Remus entered the study, frowning as he saw the state of the room. Have you done any research? What if I don't end up in Gryffindor? Harry asked. What if I end up in Slytherin, like Voldemort? Like the ones who tortured Neville's parents? Or killed Ron's, Fred's, George's, and all the other's uncles? Or like your Aunt Meda? Remus suggested, causing Harry to pause. Or like her, I suppose, Harry said quietly. Don't think that being Slytherin is the same as being evil, Harry, or being a follower of Voldemort, Remus told him. There are good and evil wizards in every house. Peter was a Gryffindor, for example. Voldemort had followers from all the houses, not just Slytherin, and some of them hadn't even attended Hogwarts or weren't even witches and wizards. But would you and Sirius be disappointed in me? Harry asked hesitantly, looking up at his godfather with a broken look. No, Remus said. No matter what house you end up in, you'll always be our little pup. Promise? Harry asked, holding out his pinky to his godfather, squeezing it with his own. Remus smiled. Promise, pup.